shame-attacking exercises. Helen felt much better when she discovered that people were not actually disgusted by her nose. But what would happen if she did look foolish, or if people did look down on her? Would that be the end of the world? To find out, Helen courageously agreed to go back to the shopping center one more time to do an even more outrageous experiment, a shame-attacking exercise. Helen put on an outrageous outfit so she really would look ridiculous, a huge feathered purple hat she'd gotten years earlier to wear in the Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans, a flamboyant red dress with long strands of brightly colored Mardi Gras beads dangling around her neck, and sequined high-heeled shoes. This time, she was certain that people would stare at her in disbelief when she smiled and said hello to them. But to Helen's surprise, people still didn't react negatively. She said that they seemed even more enthusiastic and friendly, and that quite a few of the people at the shopping center looked even more outrageous than she did. After all, this is California. While she was at the mall, Helen ran into one of her former colleagues on the chip development team. He said that they'd all been missing her and had been talking about her just a few days earlier. He said that the competition was catching up, and they needed another awesome chip to get back into the lead. He asked if she'd consider coming back and heading up their team again. Helen was overjoyed and said she'd already been thinking about a design for a new ultra-high-speed chip. Her colleague urged her to drop by and talk to the team ASAP. When I saw Helen the next week, she was overjoyed and ready to terminate treatment. Her fears about her nose had completely disappeared, and she'd already accepted a lucrative offer from her previous employer. Feared fantasy, acceptance paradox. Helen felt better when she discovered that her negative thoughts were false. All her anxiety disappeared. But there's a vitally important difference between feeling better and getting better. Before we cut her loose, we'll need to do a little relapse prevention training so that she won't have to struggle with the same problem over and over again in the future. After all, she won't be young and gorgeous forever. Will she sink back into another mood slump a few years down the line when she starts to notice a few wrinkles and gray hairs? To put it a bit differently, Helen still hasn't confronted her worst fear. When she did the experiments at the shopping center, she discovered that people weren't actually hostile and rejecting. But what if they were? Could she live with it? She can't confront this fear in reality, but she can confront it in fantasy. You may recall that when you use the feared fantasy technique, you enter a nightmare world where your worst fears come true. In this imaginary world, when you think people are looking down on you, they really are, and they always tell you exactly what they're thinking, no matter how brutal. In the following feared fantasy dialogue, Helen is playing the role of the mother from hell, and I'm playing the role of Helen. The mother from hell is at the shopping center with her two little girls. I told Helen that in her role as the mother from hell, her job would be to cut me to shreds and humiliate me by saying the worst imaginable things about my nose, things that a real person would never actually say. Here's how it went. Mother from Hell, played by Helen. My goodness, did something happen to your nose? Helen, played by David. Yes, a piece of plaster fell on my nose during the recent earthquake. There might still be a little scar there. Mother from Hell. You call that a little scar? It's about as little as the Grand Canyon. Have you considered wearing a mask when you're out in public? Helen. Gee, I never thought about that, and I don't have a mask handy right now. Is the scar upsetting you? Mother from Hell. Upsetting? I think it's disgusting. I can't stand to look at you. Helen. I had no idea my nose could make such an impact on people. Do you have an extra shopping bag? Perhaps I could make holes for my eyes and mouth and cover my head while we talk, if that would make you more comfortable. Mother from Hell. Truthfully, I think you should stay home and not show your face in public. Your nose is horrifying. Don't you realize that there are young children here in the mall? Have you thought about what might happen if they saw your nose? Turn away, children. Helen. My goodness, I hadn't thought about that either. Do you think it would be upsetting to your children to see my nose? Are they very fragile? Haven't they ever seen anyone with any kind of physical flaw or defect before? Mother from Hell. I try to protect them as much as possible. They only go to the best schools and socialize with the best people. If they saw your awful nose, they might be traumatized. Helen. That does sound serious. Perhaps you could shield their eyes while we talk. Mother from Hell. Don't you be flippant. I think your behavior is outrageous. Going out in public with your nose showing is an insult to public decency. I'm going to report you to the authorities. Helen. Please do. It sounds like a good idea. Perhaps they can warn people not to come to the shopping center on Wednesdays, because that's the day I usually come and shop. That would be great, actually, because I'd have the entire place to myself, no standing in line waiting for a sales clerk. Now, who seems like the bigger loony? Helen or the mother from hell? Helen could see that the mother from hell was the one who had the problem. This was a revelation to her because she'd always turned away from the monster she feared. She'd always told herself, I can't stand to think about that. It's too awful. But once she saw how easily I defeated her by using the acceptance paradox, she realized that there was never anything to fear in the first place. Helen's treatment required only 6 sessions. It's encouraging that the prognosis for BDD is now so bright, since it was once considered almost impossible to treat. When people learn about Helen, they sometimes ask, well, what if she really did have a bizarre scar on her nose, and people actually were shocked by how she looked? Helen was attractive and articulate, and the experiments she performed were appropriate for her. If her problems had been different, or if the circumstances of her life had been different, I would have used a completely different approach. This is one of the most important messages of this recording. There are no formulas or gimmicks you can blindly apply to different problems or types of anxiety. Rather, I'm giving you a flexible, powerful, individualized approach that you can use to overcome any kind of mood problem, including the problems that are bothering you. Let's say you've found techniques that work for you and put the lie to your negative thoughts, and you're feeling better. If you had panic attacks, they're gone now. If you were shy, you can connect with people in social situations without feeling self-conscious and awkward. If you felt inferior or depressed, you now have self-esteem. When you get up in the morning, you look forward to the day and tell yourself that it's great to be alive. Feeling better is a great accomplishment. However, there's a critical difference between feeling better and getting better. Feeling better means that the feelings of anxiety or depression have disappeared and you feel happy and confident again. Getting better means that you have the tools you'll need to deal with feelings of anxiety or depression for the rest of your life. Bad things happen, and we all suffer in our own unique ways. Some people get grouchy and irritable. Others get anxious and panicky. Some succumb to feelings of worthlessness and depression. Feeling lousy from time to time is as certain as the sun coming up in the morning. The main difference between people who suffer from depression and anxiety and people who don't is that the people who suffer from depression and anxiety tend to get stuck in their bad moods. That minute of feeling upset turns into an hour. The hour turns into a day. And the day turns into a week, a month, or even years of misery. People who don't suffer from depression and anxiety get upset just as often, but they know how to break out of their bad moods quickly, and that's something you can learn how to do. An hour, a day, or even a week or two of feeling down in the dumps is perfectly acceptable. But months or years of being trapped in feelings of despair or inadequacy, that's not necessary. You may have to try as many as 10 or 15 techniques and fail over and over again before you find the one that works for you. That will require patience. persistence, and hard work. But here's some good news. Once you've found the technique that works for you, it will probably always work for you. It might be the downward arrow, the double standard technique, the hidden emotion technique, cognitive flooding, the feared fantasy, the acceptance paradox, or a combination of two or three techniques. One way to look at it is to imagine that every person, including you, has the potential for happiness, inner peace, self-esteem, and self-confidence. But sometimes it seems to be locked up in a safe, so you can't get to it. As a result, you suffer. We're going to work together to pick the lock. We'll try one combination, but it probably won't work. Then we'll try another, but it probably won't work either. Over and over, we'll fail. But if we stick with it, eventually we'll figure out the combination. Then, all of a sudden, the door to the safe will swing wide open, and you'll feel happy and confident again. But you have to remember the combination. Write it down so you don't forget, because the door to the safe will swing closed again. If you know the combination, this won't be a problem. Over time, you'll get better and better at choosing techniques that work for you. They'll probably always work for you.